Generation Move podcast. My name is Zoe and I'm here with Kate.
Hi, we're back again.
We are back. I've got super sexy voice on because I've managed to get a virus. I think it just happens, you know, when you get towards the end of the year, body knows that I don't have any more runs to do and it's like, right, I'm just going to settle in and relax for a week or so.
It's like every teacher who listens to this right now is thinking first week of every school holidays ever.
Yes, exactly.
Every time.
So, yeah.
It's definitely a thing.
Definitely. So I'm just looking at my weights are mocking me at the moment and it's all sunshiny outside and I'd like to go for a run, but I'm just going to do the smart thing and just rest up until it goes on its merry way.
Yeah, and next week you will thank you for it, even if today you was not feeling grateful. That was a very convoluted sentence, but I knew what I meant.
yeah, it is. It's one of those things that when you're getting sick or you are sick, if you do something like that, it can really open the door with your immune system to get a whole lot worse. But when you're kind of like coming out of it and you're starting to feel better, like a good run can give your immune system a bit of a boost. So I've just got to wait till I'm on that upward swing, I think.
Yeah. And it's something that's funny, you know, learn to run often where we'll have people saying, oh, you know, this is my situation, should I run on? And we'll give the same advice generally, you know, if it's a head thing and it's not too bad, okay, if the chest thing, no. But then when it comes to doing it ourselves, we're there cursing as much as anyone else.
Yeah, and a lot of it comes down to me to sort of like aching too, you know, like at the moment I don't really feel like it's hit my chest, but I feel achy and I get to the afternoon and I feel groggy and I know it's just not a good thing at all, and I'm just gonna be I'll probably be horizontal by the time I pick up the kids from school, so I'm just focusing on getting as much fruit and vegetables in as I can and, you know, trying to beat the system with vitamins.
Yeah, nice.
We'll see how that pans out.
listening to your body, it's like it doesn't actually get easier with age, because like you might read the signs, but it doesn't change what you want anymore.
No.
Like, well, I was just going to say, I did prenatal yoga yesterday. It was my second class. And I had this whole thing about, oh, it's going to be lovely. It's going to be lying around bonding with your baby and be all feeling awesome and stretchy. And it is that, but it's also really hard work, like, because I've not done it before, I guess. And I find, and I'm obviously my strength is not what it was 6 months ago. And some of the positions are quite challenging. And after it, I thought, oh, you know, I'm going to go home and do all this stuff. And I couldn't. I just had to lie down for most of the day. And I don't want to lie down for most of the day because Wednesdays is my day when I have extra time to get things done. But, you know, you just got to listen to your body sometimes.
Yeah, and yoga is a lot more hardcore than necessarily it's given credit for.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Like, mad props to all our people out there who do it regularly, because what I thought it was and what it actually is, particularly prenatal, I think, you know, there's this added element of I've got to wrap myself in cotton wool a little bit. Yeah, no, that's not what's happening in these classes.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think that there's sort of like the yoga that people think of that's sort of in popular culture, and then there's real yoga.
Yes, and like moaning and groaning every time I change positions, because that's pretty much my life. And there's this beautiful woman next to me who was literally 39 weeks pregnant yesterday, just smoothly gliding through it, and I was looking at her thinking, you are dead set amazing. I would be in bed if I was you. I would not have even turned up.
Oh,
amazing.
Yeah, no, I don't think I was doing anything like that at 39 weeks pregnant. I think that I was on the couch moaning about being 39 weeks pregnant.
Yeah, I think it's her first, bless her heart, because it must be, because I don't know how you'd have the energy if you're doing that and you had other children at home. But it was really nice to see, oh, maybe I'll be like that, you know, at that stage of pregnancy this time, and then I remembered who I am, and later, no, that's not going to happen.
So this week We are talking a bit about, we got a question through the community group a while back on how to support someone who's learning to run, because we get a lot of people who might do the program and then they'll recommend it to their friends, and then they want their friends to have a really great experience like they did, and they want to know how to best help them and all of that kind of stuff. But we also thought we'd talk a little bit about a lot of times when people start, they're getting a lot of, obviously getting a lot of positive feedback from people like us and from their coaches and from the mentors, but there's also a lot of naysayers out there. So we thought we'd just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and I love that there are community who are already thinking about how they can support friends who'd love to learn to run as well. Like, I think that says an awful lot about the kind of people who are part of our community. And especially people who maybe have done the program with us and then have friends do it, they understand probably better than most what it's going to entail for that and how they can support them because they've just done it. But maybe for people who have been running for a while and don't have that kind of immediate memory of what that process can be like, really good idea for them to think about how they best can support their friend and help them get out there without their own agendas getting in the way.
Yeah, I mean, Lisa, who did learn to run and then she's gone on to do training programs and run club and everything else, a friend of hers has just signed up and they're both so excited. So that's really fantastic. And I think that yeah, it can be hard when you've been running for a while and there's been a long time since you've done that stuff in the beginning, and you can kind of tend to look back on it with probably a bit of rose-colored glasses, because you have such a positive relationship with running, you kind of can think about the beginning in that same way. But then not that long ago, somebody said, oh, this still feels really hard. I thought it was supposed to get easy. Like, when did it start to feel really easy for you? And I'm like, well, I don't want this to seem demotivating in any way. But in reality, particularly as someone who started running, when I probably wanted to lose about 30 or 40 kilos still, it probably took 2 years before it felt easy. And I don't want people to look at that going, oh my God. And it's not like I still enjoyed it, even though it wasn't easy, which is a really important part of that, because things being easy does not necessarily mean that you are going to enjoy them, But you can enjoy things that are hard, and you can enjoy things being done when they're hard. But to get to that real point of, like, now, if I go for a run and, say, like, an easy pace run, it doesn't really feel like I'm doing much more than breathing. Like, that's just what it feels like. And then if you have like a period of sickness, or like you get into a situation like I had not that long ago where my iron levels were a bit low, you're like, everything is hard. This feels so hard. And it's such a shock to the system because you're used to things being a certain way, which is great because it's a, sort of a red flag to say something else is going on here that you need to look at. But it can take a long while, and I think a great way to support someone is not setting these really kind of impossible standards. Like, you'll run for a few weeks and all of a sudden, you'll be able to run for 30 minutes without stopping, and you'll be able to hold a conversation, and you'll be able to take a photo at the end and not look like a beetroot.
I think it took me 2 years to reach any of those things.
It takes a long time, and it's such a the thing that I really love about it is that there's always progress, and a lot of the time it's slow progress, but it's there, and you know that if you put the effort in, you're going to get the results back, which it's kind of seems unrelated, but I had this whole conversation with Riley, who's 8, about she was on how we work Pokemon Go with the kids is Piper's account is on my phone and Riley's account is on Josh's phone. And so, I will catch stuff for Piper when I'm out and Josh will catch stuff for Riley. But generally, and Riley has a an old phone of her own that's just goes off Wi-Fi, but if she wants to use it in the car when we're going to school or something, I can hotspot it for her so she can catch some Pokemon or if we're going for a walk or whatever. But most of the time she doesn't bother to do it and she just lets Josh do all the hard work with her Pokemon Go. But Piper will play it most mornings, and it's something that I let her do because it sort of tends to ease our transition into school drop-off, and you know, whatever makes that easier I will do. And so we're in the car the other day, and Riley will occasionally catch things for Piper because she's a bit better at it. And they found, I was turning a corner and they found Pikachu, which is something that they're both psychotically interested in, and they got really, really excited when they saw it, and Riley ended up catching it for her. And then as soon as that happened and she realized she'd caught Piper a Pikachu and she didn't have a Pikachu, she was absolutely devastated, and she started to get really cranky with Piper and had this whole conversation about how, you know, someone else having something is actually nothing to do with you, and it doesn't take anything away from you, and it's not about them, and all this sort of stuff. And then she was just saying, I'm never going to catch a Pikachu, and I'm going through all that. And I said, yeah, because you don't do, you know, you don't play the game. So you can't expect, and this is a really involved conversation to be having about Pokemon Go, but I kind of looked at it as this is somebody who is sort of like wanting things but not actually willing to do the work to get things. And it's just a law of averages, like the more she plays the game, the more likely she is to catch new things that she wants. But if she doesn't play it, then she's not going to be able to do it. And we had this whole sort of conversation about if she wants something, she's actually got to put in the work. And it's a bit the same with learning to run, is that you can look at the sort of like the end bit or the highlight reel and say, I want that, but you only really want it if you're willing to do all of the stuff in between that is going to get you there. And there are a million steps sort of in between one point and what probably when you're learning you think of the end point, but later on you realize there is no end point.
Exactly. I think that is a really perfect analogy as well for what some of our people maybe deal with from friends and family members. So when they're learning to run, and even we see it even on ads sometimes, like there'll be an ad saying, you know, our next round starts now, and someone will tag a friend and the friend will come back and obviously be like, you know, haha, as if, you know, I'm only going to run if I'm running away from a bear, and, you know, that kind of thing that's meant to be funny. But it's actually kind of not funny, particularly for people who are thinking about doing it and are not sure, and they don't have the confidence yet. It's kind of a derogatory thing, unintentionally, probably. And what that person is doing is they are saying, I don't think I can do it, but I'm not willing to try either. And it's the same kind of thinking. So I'd rather make someone else who is doing it than try and possibly fail myself.
Yeah, I mean, and it is tough because you get so many negative messages from everywhere about, you know, how it's acceptable for you to look while you're exercising, how somebody the body shape of somebody who is exercising. I mean, to me, it's just this insane thing that people continually deride people who are fat or overweight, depending on what your preferred term is. I tend to use both interchangeably, but I'm aware that some people prefer fat because overweight is a judgment about where their weight should be, and some people don't like to be thought of as fat and they prefer overweight as a kind of more clinical term. So it really just depends on your own preference. But for me, I don't mind either in reference to myself or what I was. But with that kind of thing, and people are all about, oh, you know, we have an obesity epidemic, and, you know, like people are putting on more and more and more weight. But then as soon as that overweight or fat person goes out and goes for a run, they're the subject of ridicule, and it's insane to me. So, like, I have somebody who I follow on Twitter, and she's just started running again after 6 months, and she said something about going for a run, and her Twitter handle is, I think, Fat Activist. So it's pretty obvious that she identifies as a fat person just from her Twitter handle. And some random dude bro, as I prefer to call them, said,
Mm-hmm.
"Oh, were you running for candy or something like that?" Something like this. And I'm just like, man, people
It's just
suck,
unnecessary. People
you
can
know?
suck.
And so we had a bit of a conversation with that, which is actually really good because then we got into a deeper conversation about her running and why it had been 6 months, and part of it was a calf issue, and I talked her through some of the things that she could do to release her calves, and recently she had a pain-free run, so I take that as, you know, a really awesome thing coming out of a really, really awful thing, which is, you know, can easily happen on the internet when people feel like they can just, you know, say, they can say whatever they want, but, you know, they also reveal their true character by doing that. So,
I would hope that most of our people aren't dealing with that kind of level of antagonism, but definitely glad that, and in some ways it's worse coming from someone close to kind of snide, underhand thing that makes you doubt yourself. Because aside from the fact that it does make you doubt yourself, and you know, we're here to support you and to help you through this, but it's not helpful when you've got people around you who, and what they're effectively doing though is they're telling you their own issues and their thoughts about what a runner should be, what a runner should look like, what the value of doing this. But in doing so, they're trying to make your problem. And when you're starting out and you don't have the confidence yet in what you're doing, that can be really nasty. And it's a really good time to maybe jump into your learn to run group, talk to your coaches, talk to the people around you and seek that support, because there'll be other people in the same boat.
Yeah, and you know, and it's sad, but there have been people who I've coached through Learn to Run who have let me know that their partners make fun of them for going for a run. Yeah, which is
It makes me
why,
so upset.
I know, it's so upsetting, which is why I'm so pleased that there's this overwhelmingly positive force in something like a Learn to Run group, because they're, you know, some people have great support. We see lots of people where their husbands go out, or boyfriends go out on runs with them, or they have friends who tag team with them to look after the kids so they can get their run in, and they have you know, are getting lots of support. But you also have the flip side of that, where they've got an overwhelmingly negative or unsupportive approach to their running, and they need that absolutely overwhelmingly positive reinforcement from somewhere, because they need to know that what they're doing in the beginning, you know, like if you know in the beginning that what you're doing is hard and challenging, not necessarily from a physical point of view, but from an emotional point of view, then it makes it easier to do that, you know. Like, so if somebody, you know, might post, oh, you know, is it normal to feel really confronted about going outside? I'm like, yeah, of course it is. Like, I used to, as much as possible, you know, go where no one would see me. And, you know, it's obviously, you know, I could look at that as a rational, intelligent woman and know that it wasn't like that maybe I, quote, shouldn't feel that way, but knowing that I, quote, should become confident enough to not feel that way doesn't change how I do actually feel. And, you know, it, and knowing that there are lots of other people who experience that and it does get better makes a huge difference to be able to, you know, keep getting out there anyway.
Yep, and it takes conscious practice to build up that kind of psychic self-belief and psychic support of yourself as well. It's not something that comes naturally to anyone, I don't think. And it's something that we say, well, that I say all the time in my fit group, and comes up often, is this idea of telling your own story and really becoming conscious of the fact that when people are telling you about you, they're not telling you about you. They're telling you about them. What they're doing is projecting their own issues, their own insecurities, all that, putting you on, trying to make it your problem. And the more you can kind of understand that, the better you can protect yourself from that and understand, actually, I'm telling my own story. I need to take yours on board. Mine's enough.
Yeah, and I think that in those situations particularly, it can be, you know, like if there are any issues with childcare, like offering to tag team can be a great way to help someone out so that they can get their session even when they're looking after young kids, or even just saying, oh, you know, we could go together and I'll meet you at this time, can be that extra motivation to get out the door. And also people can sometimes feel, you know, a little bit more safe and less exposed if they are going out with a friend. And but just, you know, just make sure they know that you're going at their pace. They don't need to go at your pace. And, you know, as a new runner, you can kind of think, oh, well, normally they run so fast, it'd be such an inconvenience for them to, you know, run at my pace. But usually it's, as an experienced runner who often runs with people who are at a different stage of their running journey, I always really enjoy it, because it's, you know, it's just getting to be with them doing what they want to do, and it's not about me. And it's probably a lot easier than what people, because when you start running, like, you've got like one pace so it's hard to imagine somebody significantly changing their pace to run with you. But as you get further along, you realize how much easier it is to, you know, just run a lot slower than maybe what you started out at.
Definitely. And I think you have a friend or someone in life who is learning to run, particularly if you know that maybe they have got, you know, not great support from other sources, be that person for them. Be the person who helps give them ideas on how to manage care, or great places to go, or even things like where closest park run is, or maybe an event that they could start about. Just having those drivers can help too. And be the person who says, hey, I'd love to do this with you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and even to start off with, it might be, hey, let's walk park run together. You know, you can sort of ease yourself in. You don't have to go straight into the running side. There's always loads of walkers at park run.
Yeah, and community, as we know, with our own community, those communities both online, they're the things that help keep you going when things are, or when you're not finding it easy, or when you've had a break and coming back, or, you know, any one of those myriad things that kind of throw you off the path that you were on, no matter where you are, how long you've been running. If it's something you want to do, there are lots to access help and support too.
Yeah, and if you've done one of the programs and one of your friends has signed up, people often ask if they can come into the group and mentor, and we always encourage that. So, you know, mentors are always free to contact me and let me know that they want to volunteer.
Yeah. I think another thing with learning to run is when you're starting out, and as a friend of someone who's learning to run, maybe you don't remember yourself exactly how hard it was, because I think it's a bit like childbirth, you know, years come in between, you start thinking race car classes, oh, you know, it wasn't bad. But for that person starting, maybe they are finding it hard, maybe it is that bad. And if you've got your own ideas because of where you are as to what makes running easy or what goals are and things like that, it's really important that you kind of keep them to yourself, because that person needs to share themselves and their goal. You know, when they've been running for 2 years, maybe they would like to be a runner, maybe they would like to be distant. You don't know that, and it might not be the same as where you are and what you want to do in your own life. Like, I know for me, when I was starting, I thought the ultimate goal was for running to be easy. And a year in, yes, it was easy in that I could run at a comfortable pace, have a conversation if I wanted to, but that wasn't the goal anymore. Sometimes the goal was to get faster, and sometimes it was to go further, and those things are hard. And it was the hard that kept me going. Because for other people, maybe that continued easy they want. They just want to be able to go out and run and, you know, do 5Ks a day at a really comfortable pace and do that for life.
Yeah, and I mean, I think also can be really easy to kind of like put your own, either your own training philosophy or the training ideas or that you are getting from your coach onto somebody who's starting to run. So oftentimes people have asked me with they've come in to learn to run and said, oh, well, we're doing it like this, but this person says I should be doing different, you know, like I should be doing jogging recoveries, not walking recoveries, for example. And we have a chat about that, and I explain why I've written the program as I've written it. But you don't need people to be second guessing what they're doing every step of the way either. You know, like unless you have a solid understanding of what they're trying to achieve, how they're going about it, and the structure of their program as a whole, then that's not necessarily something that's going to be overly helpful.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I guess it's the same with everything, friendships and family stuff. You've got to meet people where they are at the time. You can't where you think they should be. And the same thing applies here. Like, people have joined Learn to Run with us, and they are, you know, they're paying part of a group and to have access to coaches, access to a program that they know either from friends or they've heard on the internet really works for people. They're not doing that to then have other people outside say, oh no, but that's not right, because that's unhelpful. They're doing it for the specific kind of support they're looking for, and you know, other people around maybe need to be aware of that and just help them, and you know, really encourage them to be active in their groups, because we know that the people who are active in their Learn to Run groups without fail are the ones who get the most back out of it. And you know, just be, it's really not rocket science.
No, and I mean, I think that it is the kind of thing that the people who want to know how to support a friend who's learning to run are the kind of people who are going to be a great support for that friend no matter what.
Anyway, yeah, I think you're right. And I think probably the biggest issue our new people may come up against is that, you know, there will be the odd person in their lives that they'll come across with, like, why are you doing that kind of reaction that we do see sometimes. And yeah, that's the point where you do just think to yourself, why am I doing this? Think about your reasons, because everyone's got a reason that they come to us.
Yeah.
And the majority of reasons are fantastic, and remember what that is and think about what you want to achieve and get back into that, make that your focus.
Yeah, that's one of the, like, one of the first things we do in Learn to Run is, like, have people kind of have a really think about what their reason is, what they, like, everyone has a why, and it's different for everyone. And you know, like, I think that it changes over time. It's not sort of like a set thing. I know it was very different from my reasons for starting, were very different from why I do it now. But it's a really good thing to, you know, keep focused on, because there are going to be times when you don't want to get out of bed, or you think, oh, this is a bit too hard, or, you know, like, why do I do this to myself, or whatever it is. But there's always a reason, and if you are really focused on that reason, then all of those things are much more likely to happen more easily. So I think that, you know, if you can sort of create a bit of a visual of that. We also talk through doing a little bit of that as well. It can really help, because, you know, that's essentially how I quit smoking. I put, like, post-it notes around the entire house about all of the reasons why I wanted to quit. So every time I thought about maybe wanting a cigarette, I'd kind of look at that, and it said, it would say something like, you want to feel more comfortable in social situations, because, you know, in social situations you're always having to think about when you could leave to have a cigarette, or, you know, or, you know, like, you want to save thousands and thousands of dollars. Also a solid reason. Or, you know, I had about 10 different, not hard to come up with reasons to quit smoking. But also, as an addict, it's also really easy to think of reasons to smoke. So I needed all of that stuff really sort of, like, on the walls. Like, I put it on, like, in the kitchen and in the bathroom and any place that I would, you know, spend a decent amount of time. So it would just, I would constantly see it, and it'd be constantly reinforced.
Yeah. And until you have really formed that running habit, which takes a little while, it's not something you'll do in the first week. Like, generally, I think the first 3 weeks or so, enthusiasm gets you out the door. And then for a lot of people, their period of maybe a couple of weeks where, and those are the weeks where you really need to focus on routine and just getting it done, because you haven't got the habit set yet, but you're past that initial real excitement. But if you can get through that, and that's a really great time to reach out to your coach, reach out to your group, and be really active and engaging with other people, because they'll help you through. They'll be in the same. So by the time you've got the habit, you know, at six, eight, 10 weeks, it does just become natural. But I think as well, be aware that everyone has those periods. Even people who've been running forever have these periods where they just are not into it. And it's okay. Don't beat up. Take the break, come back, start over. That's what life is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that also, and it also depends on sort of, you know, your personality and what you've got going on, because you know, some people do really well with, you know, like if they're not enjoying it, they take a break and they come back to it, and you know, and or other people like myself, it's much more like I am always sort of going, well, I don't have to feel like it, and just go and
do it anyway.
And do it anyway. I feel, you know, and there's probably, and for the most part, that is, I feel better about that afterwards than I would. But sometimes too, like sometimes it also does depend. Like there have been periods of times where my social anxiety has really kicked in, and I've cut out anything that's going to trigger that, so I haven't gone to sort of like CrossFit or gym classes or anything like that, and I've only done sort of runs relatively early in the morning when I'm unlikely to see other people, and that has just been my self-care during that time. And doing nothing wouldn't have served me as well, because going out, being outside is a, you know, a big thing that I enjoy. But definitely, you know, cutting back on things that are going to drain me more than give me energy is definitely a good way to go.
That's where things like having a good understanding of what your own drivers are is really valuable. So in that situation, you know that you serve best by you know, still getting things done, but getting them done in a way that's not going to put you in positions that are going to make you anxious. For someone else, you know, it might be the case that they really need for a period of time an extrinsic reward, and so they say to themselves, okay, when I do all my settings for the next 3 weeks, I'm going to go get a new sports bra, or, you know, something like that. So they've got that external driver helping get through that difficult period. And we all have them, and, you know, it's just a matter of getting out the other side, because it will get easier again. It always does.
Yeah, it always does. And it is one of those things that it can really help if you set up sort of rewards for yourself, you know, just to acknowledge that it is work and that you have been succeeding and you have been doing really well. It's really easy for people to kind of like sweep that sort of stuff under the carpet and not acknowledge it. But it's a really, you know, at each of those points, whether it be 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 9 weeks or whatever, that is a great achievement at each of those points. So having some kind of tangible way of you recognizing that within yourself is definitely a good thing.
And really take note of those wins, times that are hard. Like I was talking to someone this week and we were saying that there are times in your life when just getting out of bed in the morning feels like enough, because it's hard work. Just getting the kids fed, doing the things you need to do is like enough, and any more than that is going to be much. So look at the things you are achieving in the day. You did get out of bed in the morning. You did, you know, pack the kids' lunches. They're going to be well fed. You're keeping a household running. You're managing a business. You're doing all these things that we just do every day and don't actually acknowledge ourselves for doing. And if you're in a period where things are difficult, look at the things you are achieving. Maybe it's not exactly what you'd hoped at that time, but you're still getting a whole lot done.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes just getting through the day, if you're in a bad patch, is like that's maximum effort. That's sort of like extreme. And there's certainly been times like that where just getting out of bed and doing the bare minimum of feeding kids, like that has been all I've been capable of that day, and that's fine. You know, I mean,
yeah, that's enough.
That, yeah, it's more than enough some days. And you know, and it's really, really, you know, sort of counter to what you're doing to beat yourself up in any way or think negatively about it, or anything like that, because oftentimes just acknowledging that that is, you know, maximum capability on that day is enough for you to you know, then sort of go into the next day and see what's going to happen on that day rather than spending all of this time and energy rehashing things that you have regrets about or things that you can't control.
Exactly. And, you know, in a month's time you might look back and think, well, that was a really good, but I'm here now. I'm back where I'm operating on a happier level, and now I'm ready to pick up all those things that maybe had just been put aside for that little amount of time. That's, you know, it's fine. We've all got it and we've all got to deal with it. And it's just getting up in the morning, keep going one foot in front of the other and you'll get there eventually.
Yeah, and I think it's good to keep in mind too that just even purely from a fitness point of view is you're not really losing much fitness in 2 weeks. So it's really easy to think like me at the moment when I'm sick. You can think, particularly when you're starting out, I think I'm sick or, you know, like 2 days have gone. I'm going to be extremely unfit, you know, I'm going to lose it all. But it actually takes quite a while to lose fitness. And even when you do, like it tends to drop off a little bit more sharply after 3 weeks, you always sort of retain your long-term fitness. And so it's a lot easier to sort of jump back in than what it would have been when you started. Because an interesting thing about like muscle memory, where that idea came from, is that in order for muscles to build, the muscle cells add multiple nuclei to the one cell, which is what allows them to grow. And they'd always assumed that during periods of detraining, where you lose muscle mass, that you would go, it would go back to being a single nucleus and you start again with your muscle cells, but you actually don't. They always retain their multiple nuclei, so they're essentially ready to go as soon as you start deciding to use them again, and that's where the concept of muscle memory happened from.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that. One thing I do remember, though, and I've often enjoyed in various Learn to Run groups at a kind of, oh, that's really cute level, is where someone has had time off and they've been sick and they'll say to their coach, oh, where should I start? Do I need to go back to the start of those 2 weeks? And, you know, they'll get an idea of where they should restart again. And without fail, they're amazed because actually they're nowhere near as far as they thought they were. Quite often they can pick up not far from where they've left off because, they, like you were saying, they haven't actually lost that fitness. And it's a really joyful thing for them to discover that. They didn't know that their bodies could do that.
Yeah, and I mean, and you... I prefer to look at it as like people who've had a couple of weeks off are just fully rested.
Yeah.
So, you know, body feels great. You're no longer sick or stressed or whatever it was that was stopping you. And you go out there fully recovered and fully rested and you feel like $1 million. Because I think that like a lot of the time, you know, sort of advancement in fitness is a kind of like simulated exhaustion, which sounds really bad, but that's sort of what you're doing, is you are exhausting your body and then you rest your body and your body responds by taking your fitness to a higher level than what it was before. So the whole process does rely on fatigue and recovery. So when you have had a little bit of a break, especially if it's been about 2 weeks or so, you will often come into your next session at a lot higher level of fitness than what you were before.
Yeah, rest is a highly underrated thing in our lives. We should all do more of it.
Definitely. And, you know, I think that that is especially a very pointed comment for our kids, even though they don't listen to the podcast.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. My kids could do with a lot more rest, and so could I, children. Oh, dear. Fun times. My little boy just doesn't believe in sleep anymore, and it's like he's training for the baby, and it's like, I don't need training. I've done it before. Okay.
At least now, like, Piper is so hard to get to sleep at night. She's such a night owl. And to her credit, she sleeps in the morning. So, you know, which is kind of crap for school term, but yeah, kind of awesome in holidays. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you take the good with the bad. So, but now that I've got Netflix on my phone, so I just sit there, like last night I was watching a CrossFit documentary until she went to sleep. I was like, this is all right. Because, you know, how often do I actually, you know, sit down and watch something that I want to watch for a couple of hours without thinking about all of the other things, you know, that are sort of like nagging at me that I should be doing, like cleaning up this or, you know, doing this task or doing that task. You know, I mean, I think that the only benefit to like when the kids were babies and I had all of this time waiting for them to sleep is that it, well, thankfully I was doing this in a time of smartphones. If I hadn't, I would have been a lot less zen about it.
Oh, I can tell you it really sucks. I remember spending hours with my older daughter who I think is very similar to your daughter, like just doesn't do the go to bed thing. And I would lie in bed next to her and I would literally count to 1,000 over and over and over again. And by the time I had my third, smartphones existed and it just did not feel anywhere near as revolting.
Yeah, I mean, and even with that, like particularly, you know, there are points that no matter how many things that you can do while they're going to sleep, where you just don't want to be sitting in the dark until 9 o'clock at night not having eaten.
No.
You know, like it's not fun. But now that, you know, Piper's a bit older, so she's 5, so I know that if I sit next to her in the bed, it won't take her that long to go to sleep. Mm. So I mean, every now and then I have to point at her to roll over so she's not trying to watch what I'm watching. And then and every now and then she'll like tug on my headphones and she'll be like, "Mummy, mummy, I need another back tickle now." I'll do that. But for the most part, it's a lot less stressful than what it was when they were babies.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the benefits of having children is that you fully understand these years of bleeding. So it's easier to not resent it when you know, she probably won't even be doing much time and they'll be able to think, oh, I miss that, you know, cuddle time with her.
Yeah, I think, you know, last baby and she's 5, so clearly I'm hanging on to that well at this point. But and just because of the way our house is set up, she's sleeping in our bed and has been for a long while. And I don't, you know, I don't fight that because it's not going to last forever. But I think I'll be like quite sad when she starts hopping into her own bed. I mean, there'll definitely be nice parts of it, but I think I'm so used to now, like, she's always snuggled up to me to sleep, and very occasionally she'll go over to the other side and she'll snuggle up to Josh and be like, "What's happening here?
Yeah, where's my cuddle?" I know, for all my sons exhausting me at the moment, and I really don't, he added exhaustion. He I'll jump in with him when he wakes up and cuddle, and he's just all elbows and knees. He's, you know, like in that little boy's ass sometimes. He's all pointy and gangly. Be elbowing in the belly, and I'll be like, "You know, stop getting me with your pointy bits." And he's like, "But I've got lots of pointy bits." And he's just, you know, it's delightful. And in a couple of years, for him, the idea of me cuddling up to him will be horrific. Soak it up. Even at 3 a.m.
Oh, that's an ungodly time. 3, you know, like 4, I can come round to 4 as a time where you could get up and do stuff. 3.
Three's right. It's like it's worse than midnight, because midnight's, you know, close enough to have gone to bed. It doesn't feel too awful. 4 a.m, I can get 4 and start my day. I've got no issue with that. But 3 is just horrible.
That's not cool at all. You know, should definitely have words to him about that.
Oh yes,
yeah, because the kids are so receptive to that.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh dear. I guess we should go and deal with those soon. I've got to go pick them up quite soon, actually. Must be Wednesday. No, is it Wednesday?
It's not even Wednesday. It's Thursday because we're late.
Jesus. Yeah, that... Oh, this week, honestly. Blaming the lack of sleep.
My kids love Thursday because Thursday is bakery day, so I take them to the bakery after school and they can get, like, I don't, most of the time they get a giant lamington, sometimes they get a finger bun. And so Piper's always very
amazing,
very interested in what day it is, and you know, because and I guess as I part of like sort of helping her get used to school is there's usually something on each day. So like Tuesday, I pick them up early so I can take Riley down to CrossFit Kids, and she likes being picked up early. Wednesday, I take them to swimming, so that's pretty exciting. Thursday is bakery day, and Friday is lunch order day. So I've got things lined up to ease her transition into school drop off, and she'll be like, "No, I don't want to go." And I'm like, "Oh, bakery day, man! You know, like you don't go to school, then we can't go to the bakery."
That's awesome. I think I need to inject a bakery day in my life. That sounds like the best invention ever.
Yeah, I mean the Lamingtons are huge, and because it's you know it's like a proper country bakery, so they actually make cakes are really nice there. And I sometimes have some of the Lamington because they're very yummy.
Oh, I'm so hungry now. I think
Yeah,
I need a Lamington.
definitely
Baby
Lamingtons
needs.
can be. Could definitely be on the cards today. But, and with that in mind, we'll leave you with that thought of Lamingtons. You're welcome. And we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
And just a reminder that we have Learn to Run registrations finish up on Sunday. It's the last one for the year. It will run from the Monday, the 24th of October. And we're actually going to have a 2 week break over Christmas. So if it's something that you want to sign up for and are worried about what will happen over Christmas, we've actually built in a break because we know it's a really busy time for everyone. And then it will pick up again from the beginning of January and run until the end of January. So if you would like to get on our last program for the year, then you can just head over to the website and sign up, and it will be open anytime up until Sunday evening if anyone wants to take it down to the wire. And we will talk to you next week. Bye.